This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, the battleground for health reform has moved to the federal court, and we finally just heard from the federal judge in Virginia who ruled that part of the health reform legislation, the individual mandate requiring all individuals to purchase health insurance, is unconstitutional. And we know this is the first round of a very long battle, certainly a political setback for the administration, as this is likely to make healthcare a topic of intense debate in the new Congress, if they needed any prompting, and as well into the 2012 presidential campaign.
Well, certainly true. A little hard to see how it could be made any more of an issue than it already is. But about that ruling, the fate of this decision ultimately lies, of course, with the Supreme Court. And the Obama administration seems confident that things can turn in their favor. This is the first setback to two lawsuits that have already been ruled on concerning health reform and the individual mandate. And proponents anticipate that the remaining challenges to the law will have worked their way through the system by the time the insurance requirements take place in 2014. And Mark, I think it's important to note that the judge in this case said that the rest of the bill, outside of the individual mandate, was okay, and he wasn't willing to grant an injunction. So I think those can be looked at as somewhat positive elements of this decision.
I think you're right about that. There are about 20 lawsuits out there covering the sort of waterfront of issues, but this is a very conservative judge. He seemingly has narrowed the focus that people will have on reform, but there's much more to happen in the federal courts, and we'll keep an eye on it here.
And I think that even whether people know a lot about healthcare or policy or not, one thing that everybody understands is that without the individual mandate, you'll have a process whereby people with the biggest healthcare problems end up getting insurance. If everyone's not in the pool, the costs go up. But simple as it sounds, President Obama and the administration have to fight very hard to defend this measure.
And they will. Meanwhile, implementation will go on. This ruling did not affect the immediate efforts to carry out the law. Administrative officials said they still plan to expand Medicaid and create the exchanges in each state.
And on that note, let's return to our show and introduce our guest today, Dr. Howard Koh. Dr. Koh is the Assistant Secretary for Health in the Department of Health and Human Services. He has a long and distinguished background, has been dedicated to promoting prevention and wellness policies throughout his entire career, which includes being Commissioner of Public Health for the state of Massachusetts. We look forward to hearing from him about public health and its impact on the country.
But no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. And if you would like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. You can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and also follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We love to hear from you. Now, before we speak with Dr. Howard Koh, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, for the headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. A federal court judge in Virginia issued a much-awaited ruling on whether the new health law violates the Constitution. Judge Henry Hudson ruled that part of the health law, the individual mandate to buy health insurance, is unconstitutional. The ongoing rollout of the law, however, will not be affected until the Supreme Court reaches a verdict, which could take up to 2 years. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs says the Obama administration expects its law to be upheld as it moves through the judicial process.
We're confident that it is constitutional, and quite frankly, of the three courts that have rendered decisions on this question, two have ruled in our favor.
This case is the first to strike down any part of the health reform law. Congress voted to prevent a 25% cut to Medicare payments that would have kicked in January 1st of the new year. Payments to Medicare providers will remain at current levels until the end of next year. The Senate approved the bill with unanimous consent before sending it to the House of Representatives for final vote. Senator Harry Reid said it will give some relief to Medicare providers for the time being, while Congress works on a more permanent solution next year.
It was a struggle to get it done, but we worked together and got it done. It's done for a year. We've been doing it on a monthly basis of 3 months, and at least a year is a step in the right direction.
The $19 billion bill, otherwise known as the Doc Fix, was paid for by a tweak to the new health reform law. The cost will be offset by changing a provision of the new health care law that offers subsidies to lower-income people to help them buy insurance starting in 2014. This bill allows the government to recover more of any overpayments that people might receive if they misstate their income or earn more than they expect in a given year. President Obama applauded the action by Congress and expects to sign the bill into law shortly. And speaking of bill signing, President Obama signed the Healthy, Hunger-Free Kids Act into law after it passed both houses of Congress with bipartisan support. The president says the bill will help provide all children with healthy foods in schools.
This act is about doing what's right for our children. Right now, across the country, too many kids don't have access to school meals. And often the food that's being offered isn't as healthy or as nutritious as it should be.
The legislation was strongly supported by First Lady Michelle Obama and her campaign to fight childhood obesity. This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're discussing some of the public health and prevention initiatives underway at the Department of Health and Human Services. Although smoking rates have decreased significantly over the decades, tobacco use remains the leading cause of premature and preventable deaths in our society. Approximately 20% of Americans smoke, and the government hopes to reduce that number by 12% by 2020. There are several ways the Department of Health is trying to achieve this. The Affordable Care Act will give Americans in private and public health plans access to recommended preventative care like smoking cessation treatment, and Medicaid will be expanded to cover these related programs. Under the new law, states that voluntarily cover all recommended preventative services and immunizations for all Medicaid enrollees will get an increase in their federal Medicaid reimbursements. According to the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, these changes are an important first step to guaranteeing coverage for smoking cessation to all Medicaid recipients, since lower-income Americans have higher rates of smoking compared to the general population. About 33% of Medicaid recipients smoke, compared to 20% of the total adult population. Right now, only 6 states provide comprehensive coverage for Medicaid recipients. Those states include Indiana, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Nevada, Oregon, and Pennsylvania. HHS has also brought smoking prevention back into the spotlight with a new national action plan for tobacco control that they hope will finally end the smoking epidemic. The new plan will require cigarette manufacturers to place gruesome images on cigarette packs. The new warning labels will have to cover half the front and back of packs and 20% of large ads, and they could include images of emaciated cancer patients or diseased organs. Beginning in October 2012, cigarette makers that do not put the new warning labels on their packaging will not be allowed to sell their brands in the United States. Let's turn now to our interview with Dr. Howard Koh, who can tell us more about building a system of prevention.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Dr. Howard Koh, Assistant Secretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome, Dr. Koh.
Thank you.
Dr. Koh, you've had a long and very distinguished career in medicine and public health. We're glad to see you've spent 8 years here in Connecticut at Yale College in medical school. You also served for 6 years as Commissioner of Public Health for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. From our perspective, every state is a potential laboratory for creative approaches to solving difficult issues. What key lessons did you learn as commissioner that you're finding relevant today in your role as HHS Assistant Secretary?
I feel very, very blessed to have had multiple perspectives on health. And a lot of what drives me now as the Assistant Secretary comes from my experiences first as a young physician and clinician caring for patients, and then later as the state health commissioner, as you mentioned. When you're a young doctor in training, particularly, you want to cure patients and make every patient as healthy as possible, and you focus traditionally on individual biology of disease of patients, and that's the way I started when I was at Yale Medical School and then went to training later in Boston. But when you go through that experience as a doctor and a clinician and provider, you quickly see so much suffering that could be prevented and even death that could be prevented. So that was transformative for me, and I went on to care for patients for over 30 years, and that was just mm-hmm. a tremendously satisfying experience. But I saw so many times where prevention should have and could have played a role. And then later as a state health commissioner, I got to see where policy changes and focusing on broader perspectives can really help people and live healthier lives if we focus on public health and prevention. So those are some of the messages and themes that bring me to this current job as Assistant Secretary for Health.
And Dr. Koh, in this role, you have really an enormous portfolio of people and programs to watch out for. The Office of Surgeon General, the United States Public Health Service Commission Corps, the 10 regional offices around the country. But I note that Secretary Sebelius, at the time of your appointment, said that you would in particular be focused on carrying out the prevention initiatives under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Can you describe for our listeners some of the key elements of the prevention initiatives under the Health Reform Act, and where are we today with getting them rolled out?
Well, what thrills me now is we are really in a transformative moment in American public health history, because the Affordable Care Act that the President signed into law in March really focuses on not only increasing access to care and insurance coverage for millions of people, but also building true systems of prevention for the first time. And that theme applies at multiple levels. So for individuals now, new plans are required to offer preventive services to beneficiaries without cost sharing. That means we don't want cost to be a barrier for people to get good prevention. So for people covered under new plans, they can get cancer screening and tobacco counseling and alcohol counseling and other preventive services without out-of-pocket costs. Are there opportunities for states and communities to get more funding for prevention? And then there's, on a national level, a new emphasis on a national strategy for prevention. There's a national prevention strategy due to Congress in March of 2011, a new National Prevention Council, and new national prevention funding that is unprecedented. So this is a time in our country where we're hearing much more about prevention at the individual and the community level, and it's a great opportunity for the country.
Well, Dr. Koh, as you said, we're seeing this reemergence of the importance of public health and prevention and health promotion in the country. We had the pleasure to speak with Dr. Michael McGinnis several weeks ago, who did a lot of the initial work on Healthy People Initiative. And we're very interested in seeing the new Healthy People 2020 goals that were just released, ambitious and important. What are some of the key initiatives you are leading to help America meet these goals? And how much of an impact will health reform have on our ability to meet these goals?
Mark, first of all, thank you for mentioning Dr. McGinnis, who is a true public health hero for the country. And Healthy People is a very exciting initiative that gets updated every 10 years. So, in fact, Healthy People 2020, our national goals for the next 10 years, was just unveiled by mm-hmm. the department last week, and we're very, very excited about it. And there are four overarching goals. First, to improve quantity and quality of life. Secondly, to achieve true health equity for people and reduce health disparities. Third, to make sure the message of public health and prevention occurs for people throughout the lifespan, because we know that health is a gift, and we have to talk about prevention and public health every day throughout the lifespan. And then fourth, we need a broad community approach to health. So there's a wonderful line in Healthy People that the health of the individual is almost inseparable from the health of the greater community, mm-hmm. and the health of every community drives the health of the entire nation. And so the health of the individual and the health of the community is really interconnected. And the message of Healthy People 2020, the new vision, is that we are all interdependent and we're all interconnected and we all have promises to keep.
Well, thank you, and I hope that that report gets very widespread dissemination. We'll certainly do our part on that.
Wonderful.
You know, as far as challenges ahead for public health, one of the most vexing that's been with us is, of course, continuing to try and reduce smoking consumption. That's a top issue. And I think there's some worry that we've seen some of the progress on reducing adult and youth smoking rates plateau nationally. But I'll go back to Massachusetts for a moment. They have been a real leader. And as I understand it, in 2006, they changed their Medicaid program to pay for tobacco cessation counseling and for treatment for Medicaid enrollees. And the result was a really quite astonishing drop in the population of people who smoked who were Medicaid enrollees. And they showed even short-term savings from decreased health costs. Well, in your role, are you advocating for nationally in terms of policy reform that would continue to drive down the use of tobacco? What would you like to see in the national policy?
We need to remind the country regularly that tobacco dependence remains still the leading preventable cause of death and suffering in this country and around the world. We have over 1,000 people a day dying from tobacco dependence in this country, and there's no other condition where we are projecting 1 billion deaths in the 21st century. That's 1 billion deaths in the 21st century around the world because of tobacco dependence and addiction. So there is no greater public health challenge. And unfortunately, this dependence is increasingly falling on lower-income populations. So we need to redouble our efforts to end the epidemic. And, Margaret, the experience you just cited is a very exciting example of where when you put all your public health and prevention resources and apply the best science and intervention, you can really make a difference. In the Massachusetts study you mentioned, there was outreach for smokers who are on Medicaid. People on Medicaid generally have smoking rates sometimes up to double the general population. But with counseling and with access to pharmaceutical agents to help cessation, with outreach and coverage, the smoking rates dropped very, very quickly. And as a former Massachusetts Health Commissioner, I'm very proud of that study. And I think that's an example of what we can do in this country to really make a difference with this public health challenge.
And a difference it makes. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Howard Koh, Assistant Secretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Koh, you oversee the United States Public Health Service Commission Corps, one of the seven uniformed services and probably the least known to the general public. How does the Corps impact health and healthcare in the United States, and what are the priorities under the current administration?
The Commission Corps has a very proud history that dates back into the past several centuries, and traditionally the Corps has responded to crises and protected the public and particularly served vulnerable population. We have tremendous professionals in the Indian Health Service, for example, caring for Native American populations around the country. We have Commissioned Corps officers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention who respond to infectious disease outbreaks and are deployed and serve on site. With the recent earthquake in Haiti, we had Commissioned Corps officers travel to Haiti and deliver services there. So the Corps is an area where we've put in tremendous time and energy to make sure that it remains a vibrant organization that serves the country and serves public health.
Well, we're glad to help get the word out about their incredibly good work. And Dr. Koh, there is an enormous amount of interest in meaningful use of electronic health records by healthcare providers and meaningful health information exchange at the state and the regional level. But I think one of the most interesting and important areas for improvement in health information technology is probably in public health. And while we do have, I think, better systems for communication and data than we did pre-9/11, I think most experts would agree that we still don't have state-of-the-art health information technology in our state public health departments and local public health departments, and we don't really have a national system. How are you and your colleagues at HHS approaching this issue?
You're absolutely right, Margaret. We need to modernize health records around the country and make it as current as possible so that we can have information available for not only for patients, but also for prevention for populations. And if we can also use that technology to prompt providers to get prevention delivered for their clients, that's another big bonus. So Dr. Blumenthal, the Office of the National Coordinator, the President and Congress have put tremendous resources into promoting what's called meaningful use, as you've noted, to make electronic medical records the standard of practice around the country.
Dr. Koh, we can't talk about public health prevention, wellness, and eliminating health disparities without talking about obesity. At our community health center, we care for over 100,000 patients. But when it comes to obesity, we're taking the fight to schools through our Recess Rocks program, to downtown social dance halls, and to parking lots with farmers markets. We're not beating this one in the exam room. We know it's an important issue to the White House, and certainly the First Lady has been such a great leader. What's the thinking at HHS about how to address this from a public health perspective?
You're absolutely right. Obesity has become a major public health challenge in our time, particularly among kids. And we know that with obesity rates rising, it's driving diabetes rates and leading to preventable heart disease and even preventable cancer and other adverse outcomes. So again, we need a broad public health approach here, an approach that involves not only individuals but entire communities. And this is where the First Lady's leadership in her Let's Move initiative has been absolutely tremendous. There was a childhood task force report that was unveiled last February that put out a number of areas for emphasis, so that we need to obviously improve nutrition for young kids. We need to make schools healthier with respect to nutrition. We need to make sure there are no food deserts around the country, so that healthy and nutritious foods are available to people and it's accessible to people. And we need the broadest community approach here to promote physical activity and fitness and safe routes to schools and other themes.
Dr. Koh, there is so much fascinating, interesting, groundbreaking work going around the world, and we'd like to ask all of our guests this question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Well, let's see. One key innovator in my department, who I'm very proud of, is our new and first ever Chief Technology Officer, Todd Park. Mm-hmm. And Todd comes from the world of data, which at first glance doesn't sound that stimulating or innovative, but what Todd has done is has worked very hard to make all health data available to the public for free in what he is calling the Community Health Data Initiative. He often points out that weather information has been made available through government channels, so that we have weather channels and weather information that people can use for innovative and creative purposes. He wants a similar situation for publicly collected health data. And when we unveiled Healthy People 2020 last week, he was there with us to announce an applications challenge, an apps challenge, with the belief that if you get health data online, on web, that's relevant to your community and neighborhood, and people see the threats that are very relevant and personal to them, it can really motivate action and really galvanize communities to work to make a difference. So Todd Park is a person with a lot of innovation.
And we would say that's super cool.
Then that's super. I think you must know him. He uses that term a lot, and he also likes talking about inner mojo. And he's got so much energy, and I think he's going to make this data come alive, and so we can use the best evidence possible to make people as healthy
Great.
As possible.
Well, thank you so much. And today we've been speaking with Dr. Howard Koh, Assistant Secretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Mark and Margaret, thank you very much.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on a public health initiative underway in New Delhi, India, called the Delhi Nulus Project. New Delhi resident, urban planner, and architect Manit Rustogi conceived the plan in 2008 as a way to transform his city into a healthier place to live. At its core, the plan focuses on transforming the city's sewage-laden canals, or nulas, into a network of clear-flowing streams by installing small-scale equipment to treat the sewage at its source. The nulas originally carried stormwater, but with the rapid urbanization of Delhi, they now consist of garbage and waste. The Delhi Nulus Project is about more than just clean water. According to Rustogi, it's really about solving a multitude of health issues in New Delhi,
alongside the cleaned-up Nulas, which run about 200 miles long through New Delhi. Walkways and bicycle paths will be added. The goal is to increase physical activity and reduce air pollution for a city that adds 1,000 cars daily to its already overcrowded roadways. This will hopefully reduce much of the disease that results. Three pilot projects are already underway in New Delhi. If successful, this model could also be replicated in other developing countries. By revitalizing a network of polluted waterways, the New Delhi Nulas project is creating a more sustainable environment, a healthier and more engaged citizenry in New Delhi. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.